I don't know how to measure friendships. Not sure how you can. I could talk about Joe as a pastor, Joe as a missionary. I'm just going to talk about Joe as a friend. I'm not sure exactly how you measure friendship, but I think there are a couple ways that I would measure them. Number one, number of cups of coffee logged. How many cups of coffee do you think we've logged? Meaning, would be written down in the log as we drank together. How many? 3 a week. A lot. More for me than you. That's one measurement tool. And the other measurement tool is when you're confused, who do you call on the phone? And Joe's been one of those people for me. Joe and Gloria have been a wonderful asset to our church family. They have been stable and wise, Christ-centered, helpful, constructive, calm, consistent. We're about ready to listen to them present what the next stage of their mission in serving Jesus is, serving the church and the mission of the church in Tanzania. So if you could, would you stand and greet both of them, I guess, really, with a standard canon welcome.
Thank you. Sometimes I wonder what kind of pleasure he gets out of doing that. Tim, thank you. I don't know of a better, more affirming way to be introduced. But yeah, we have walked together, and I have a feeling this morning, if you could really see inside his heart, you might see a few bruises that maybe I have inflicted. But they were bruises of love. So we talk pretty frankly sometimes. You know, I'm just thinking about my relationship with Tim, and there's a couple reasons, I think, why we have a close relationship. This isn't really what I'm here to say, but let me say it anyway. A couple reasons why we have a close relationship. One of them is I've been there, where Tim is, as a young pastor, and I know it's not an easy place. And, so one of the things, I want to see Tim succeed as a person and as a pastor, and that is there. The other thing is, I have a son that's just about the same age and height as he is. And boy, you know, you just don't get over that. And so, I don't anyway. So that's another thing that enters into it. So thanks to him. Tim introduced us, and I want to just say a few things, then Gloria's going to share a bit, and then I have some more things. But what we want to talk about today is what kind of feels to us like a new chapter of our lives opening up, and you know, just about the time we think we're ready to settle down and retire. You know, God has other plans, and in fact, you know, it's interesting just talking about phase shift, the changes in our lives. Just yesterday, can I say, just yesterday, she got her Medicare card in the mail. I've had mine for over a year, but yeah, so that's where we are in life, you know, and this is the time to relax and enjoy the grandchildren and so on. But it looks like our lives are taking a different direction. Our focus today, really, what we want to talk about is the Mennonite churches in East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania, and their need for a program to train leaders. And so I hope by the time we're finished here, you'll have a bit of an insight, a glimpse into some of the needs, the challenges that are there in the church. It is a church that is growing. It is growing. And it's just not able to keep up with the demand for leaders. They need pastors. You know, when in our churches here in America, when we need a pastor, what do? We send out the word, we get several candidates, we get names, and then we choose among them. It's not that way in Africa. You look around, you find somebody. You might even have to send him away to school. There's just not a large pool of pastors available and leaders. But even more than that is just the fact that God is working. God is working. As somebody said, across the street and around the world, the church is moving forward. Sometimes it's amidst certain kinds of odds, but the church is moving forward. And you know, I prefer to think of it like God is not waiting for us. He's not waiting for me to get out there and do something in order to move his work forward. God is moving. The train's leaving the station. Now the question is, am I going to be on it or not? Are we going to be part of what God is doing? So it's not how can I move God's work forward, it's how can I join what God is doing. And as we get involved in the church in Africa, that's the question that we want to keep in front of us. Last summer we got an email. It said, you all have been in East Africa before, and we were. We spent 10 years of our lives there. Our children mostly grew up there. But that's been over 20 years ago. And they said, would you consider going back? The churches are asking for help in designing, developing leadership training programs for pastors especially. And so we thought about that and finally decided to accept that. In fact, when we thought about it, we said, well, this is a place that we've been before. We know the area. We know how to get from A to B. We know a lot of the people. We do know the culture. We know the language. We are ready to retire, so we're available. And so and we enjoyed our time there. So really the question almost became, why not? Instead of why, it became why not? It seems like we have a lot of the resources that are needed there, and so we decided to, yeah, this is for us, and we've been moving in that direction. And when I say that, I don't mean to say that we feel like we have all that it takes. We also know some of the struggles of living in a place like that, cross-cultural situation, not always easy. Don't always have all the conveniences that we might be used to. But we've also experienced God's grace. And as I share this morning, as we share this morning, it's just in a deep sense of appreciation for who God is and what he has done in our own lives. We just want to somehow give that back if we can. So this morning I want to share some about the church and some of the challenges it faces. We want to inform you about what we're going to be doing in that, and also then invite you to be part of it in many ways. Because one of the tasks of mission is to build bridges between churches. And I'll be saying a little bit more about that this morning. What do we need? And I'm going to get the commercial out of the way first of all, I'm going to put it there. We do need prayer. We need friendship. We also need funds. We need to raise our own funds, and we're working on that. We need to have 2 years committed before we go, and so we're about halfway there. And so we invite you to be part of that as well. God lays this on your heart. Probably it was a couple months ago you received something in your mailboxes about that. There are also a few forms on the back table there, with a prayer card and some forms under it that have a form attached that you can send in a pledge and so on. So that part is there. That's an important part of it. When the funds are together, we'll be ready to go. He has your Medicare card now, so we're ready to go. But we're not quite sure when that is. We're expecting sometime later this year and keep you in informed about that. Let me just say one more thing. We have formed a local support team that is helping us work at those issues. And they will continue to carry responsibility for support, both finances, but also communications, newsletters, and so on, prayer. And that team is Mark and Wendy, and Richard and Janet Kaufman, and Mark and Sherry, our daughter, and son-in-law, are on that team. So they're the ones who will be anchoring it back here. Okay, that's enough of an introduction for me. Gloria's going to share some of her thoughts. So Gloria's going to share, so I invite her to come and share what she has.
As we were considering this opportunity, I'm going to say opportunity because I feel it is that, an opportunity. I was given a verse in John 12, 24 to 26 that I'd like to share with you this morning. It says this, "Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Those who love their life will lose it, and those who hate their life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will my servant be also. Whoever serves me, the Father will honor." Now, you might be wondering why this verse came to me. But 20 years ago, when we came back from East Africa, we fully intended to go on back to East Africa. We had committed ourselves to being lifetime missionaries in East Africa. And we came home thinking we were coming home for a furlough. But due to a variety of things that happened, we decided that it was better for us at the present time to remain in the States. And in many ways, it felt like the death of our dream. God's timing called us to remain in stateside and get involved in kingdom work here for those 20 years. In August, when we received another call to go back and minister, this verse became a little clearer to me. Those first 10 years that we spent in East Africa were planting years. We planted seeds. We worked with church leaders, leaders who had no education, leaders who had no opportunities. And then they got very excited about doing God's work. They started doing God's work, and we really weren't necessary in God's plan at that point because they were excited about what God was going to do through them. We had planted the seed. Our seed had to die so that God's seed could grow. Now, after 20 years, God's brought forth fruit in the Tanzanian Mennonite Church. We, at that time when we were there first, the church was going through many struggles. It was a difficult time. But God gave vision to those young leaders, and God used those young leaders and started working among them, and they have multiplied the kingdom in Tanzania to the point now that they're saying, "We need help. Please come back and help us to train our leaders, to help get training for these leaders and to then handle all of this growth that has happened." So now we're called to participate in a different way. Maybe watering, maybe helping them to stake up the plants that are there. But God wants to use us again in a special way for a certain purpose. And so we're asking you all to participate in God's plan to use us again in a special way. I just want to bring out again what this verse says. Unless a grain dies, it remains single. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Think about the seed that maybe needs to die in your own lives. And then allow God to let it work, okay? Let God work. In many ways, we don't often understand how God is going to work. But God works despite us sometimes. God works without us sometimes through other people. And we have to allow God to work. And then just go back to this again. If you love life, you're going to lose it. But if you hate your life in this world, which means giving up some of the things that you would desire to have most of all, then you will have eternal gain. And then the last verse says, whoever serves me, serving means following. Serving means following. But we're blessed with the presence of Jesus if we follow. And God also honors us as we give ourselves to his service.
Thank you. I've prepared a short sort of DVD with some narration and some pictures and an explanation of the situation. So let's go ahead and show that now and continue.
Tokeni twende tumeitwa na Mwokozi. Bwana Yesu anatuita leo. Tokeni twende.
In the nearly 80 years since the first Mennonite missionaries arrived in Tanganyika on the shores of Lake Victoria and held the first worship service under this tree, the church has grown to approximately 50,000 members in nearly 400 congregations throughout Tanzania and Kenya. Several years ago, an Ethiopian Mennonite leader, Milian Beleti, made this statement: "Leadership training is the biggest single issue in the church in Africa today because of the rapid growth in the churches. In America and Europe, the problem is how to fill the churches. In Africa, the problem is how to properly care for the people who fill the churches. This is still true today. Growing in numbers and starting new churches continues to be a priority for East African Mennonite leaders. The churches in Dar es Salaam have adopted a plan to add 10 new churches and 2,000 members in the 3-year period beginning in 2010. This will double the size of the diocese. The Dodoma Diocese is presently 13 congregations, and they plan to add 15 new churches in the next 5 years. The church does not lack vision, and especially in urban areas, some of the leaders have higher education and experience in administration. They are employed in government, or education, or business, but they have identified a need for training in biblical and theological studies and pastoral leadership. One elder said to me, we have leadership experience in government and business, but that is different from church leadership, which is based on biblical principles and has different goals. In smaller towns and rural areas, on the other hand, many of the people have only a primary school education, up to grade 8, and a few have completed secondary school. And there is also the need for biblical knowledge and training in church leadership skills. In Mwanza and surrounding region, there are presently 25 churches, and the leaders have identified 17 villages in the area where there is no church. They plan to form an evangelistic team to go to each village to evangelize, and when there is a group of believers, they will assign a lay pastor to nurture the group and organize a fellowship. African nations have described their challenges as poverty, ignorance, and disease. Or to say it in other words, the issues are economic, education, and health. The churches live and work in that setting and consider it their mission to respond to these issues as part of the gospel. It is following the example of Jesus. There is a shortage of resources in funding and expertise, so they work in partnership with government or with private agencies to fulfill the mission. Wherever they plan to do evangelism and start a church, there is also a plan to serve the community through education or health services or economic development. I visited the Arusha Mennonite Church, where they provide offices for the staff of Compassion International and their student adoption program. They also sponsor a preschool for local children. The question the bishops are asking is, where will we find leaders for the new churches? Their vision for outreach and expansion is impressive and inspiring, and the request for help in training leaders is a challenge to us to partner with them. 20 years ago, the Theological Education by Extension program gave the church a big boost by providing training for nearly all the lay pastors in the Shirati and Musoma areas. But with the departure of the missionaries, the program soon stopped operating because it depended on financial assistance for materials and transportation. The church's request for help is not to send people to do it for them, but to partner with them in a way that they can continue on after missionaries leave. It is not just to provide education for leaders, but to help the church build the capacity to carry on training programs that will meet the need for leaders in the years to come. The Mennonite Theological College in Eastern Africa is located near the town of Musoma on Lake Victoria. Its history goes back to the 1960s, when the existing Bible school was upgraded to a theological college curriculum and new buildings were built to house the program. It continued through the 70s, but ceased operating during the 1980s due to declining enrollment and problems in church leadership. It was reopened in the early 1990s and has continued to provide secondary level theological training to the present. In recent discussions, the staff and the board of directors are considering ways to strengthen the financial base of the college and to upgrade the program to meet the need for higher level training. Out of our discussions with the bishops, we have identified the need for training at three different levels. The first level is basic training in biblical knowledge and leadership skills. This is for lay leaders in local congregations and should be offered locally to persons who cannot leave home to attend a residential school. Many of these persons have a primary school education. The second level is advanced training for persons who have completed secondary school and will be pastors and other upper-level leaders. This level will be best provided at the residential program of Mennonite Theological College. The third level is in-service training for existing leaders, especially pastors and bishops, and for ongoing encouragement and enrichment. For this, special seminars and workshops can be planned with visiting resource persons. We are planning to spend the next 4 years of our lives in East Africa to work with Mennonite leaders in developing leadership training programs. They are asking for training that focuses on the needs of the church and its people, that is effective in helping leaders to minister to their particular situation, and that is sustainable in the local setting and economy. A priority will be to build capacity to enable the church to continue training using local resources and expertise. But it is also an opportunity to build bridges of cooperation and partnership across cultures and national boundaries. So we invite you to participate in what God is doing in East Africa. We recognize the spiritual dimension of this work of nurturing leaders in the growing churches, and prayer is an important part. We also acknowledge that there are material needs, funding for our travel, for our medical coverage, and for program expenses. Together, we can make a difference.
That gives you a bit of a picture of the situation, the challenges there. This morning, I want to start by referring to Ephesians. Tim has been preaching through Ephesians, so I don't want to steal all his thunder from next week. But I do want to look at Ephesians chapter 2. And last week, last week he talked about the first 10 verses where he talks about the problem of our sin and the solution of God's grace, how that we were dead in sins. We used to live in them. We followed the powers of evil, how that by nature we're the children of wrath. And you know, it raises the question, how can something that is so good, because that's what God said when he created man, he said, this is very good. How can something that is so good go so wrong? But I believe that even in our sin, you know, we still carry God's image, and there's the potential there to be redeemed. And that's what God is about for us and for others around us. And then he talked about how we are God's creative work. But then the next section, the rest of the chapter, and this leads into what I want to share this morning. He is talking about how that the gospel breaks down walls and makes peace. And that almost sounds like it might apply to us, doesn't it? But I will try not to go there today. But this is a natural follow-up to the first 10 verses, because when we are reconciled to God, the natural outcome is reconciliation with each other. Reconciliation crosses barriers. It's called the wall of hostility. Jesus came to break down the wall of hostility. And he was talking about the differences between Jews and Gentiles, difference in heritage and background, and how that his purpose was to create one new man out of the two. And so that's all in the second part of Ephesians 2. And he ends up by using the example of the church as a building, where he says, in him the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him you too are being built together to become a dwelling place in which God lives by his Spirit. Now he's talking about us. He's also talking about the church around the world. So I want to build on this text, not just how it applies to us here, but I want to think about it in terms of the global church and consider what this means for us to be one with our brothers and sisters around the world. People who have different background than what we do, different values sometimes, different heritage, different cultures. And part of what Paul is talking about is that Jesus came to break down these barriers. So that's the piece I want to look at more this morning. And the verse I would really like to go through is the one that was up here, Philippians chapter 1, verses 3 to 6. Now, he starts out this chapter in the first two verses. He says this, Paul and Timothy, servants of Christ Jesus, to all the saints in Christ Jesus at Philippi, together with the overseers and deacons, grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, Paul is writing from prison, and he's writing to the church in this town of Philippi, and he's wishing them grace and peace from God for their own life and ministry. Now, Philippi was a prosperous city up in Macedonia, which is modern Greece, and it prided itself as being a Roman colony. It Roman citizenship. It had a Roman flavor to it, and it was there on a major highway between east and west near the coast, so it was a seaport. It was a political center, and probably about 10 years before this, Paul and Silas and Timothy had visited there, and I think you know the story. They've been traveling through what is now Turkey, through Asia Minor, going to new areas, and apparently Paul wanted to go up into this one area, up, I think in the northern part, and somehow God said to them, no, you don't go there. That's not my plan for you. Paul sensed that. So they went as far as they could go, out to the eastern end of that landmass, and said, now what, God? And it was that night in a dream, he saw a man saying, come over to Macedonia. We need your help over here. This is from the city of Philippi. So that's where they ended up. And then, as you know the story, they were on their way to worship one Sunday, and they met a slave girl who was fortune-telling or something like that, earning a lot of money for her masters. And Paul and Silas and Timothy cast out this demon of divination, and that got them in a lot of trouble. It got them in a lot of trouble because there went their income, at least that part of it. So they were jailed. There was the earthquake, and it sounds like they left under pressure, people telling them, hey, it's best if you just go. So we don't know how long they were there, but they weren't there a long time to build up this church. But that's the background for that. So Paul is sitting in jail 10 years later, remembering his experiences in Philippi. Now, I'm told that when you're in jail, one thing you have lots of is time. And so there Paul was, thinking back. A lot of times people sit there and they think about what got them there and what they should have done different, what they're going to do different. But Paul was thinking about the past and the churches he visited. He came to Philippi and he decided to write them a letter. And I think as he thought about them, he remembered them. He knew about the struggles that they were having, trying to be God's people in a culture that was so anti-gospel. And so this is what he wrote. Verses 3-6. I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. As we were beginning to think about our working in Africa, this is a verse that came to us and seems to express so well how we feel about our time there. So we share this joy. We felt this joy as we thought back on the good memories that we had, many good friends that we have there, so many enriching experiences, experiencing God's presence, both good times and not so good times. We were shaped in ministry as we worked there. And so it was just a very meaningful time. But then Paul also talks about the partnership in the gospel. And we remember the times that we walked together with them in the work of the gospel. When we first went over, the assignment was to teach in this Bible school where young men who were aspiring to be leaders would come to the Bible school for training. And that's where we worked to begin with. And as the video mentioned, during that time that we were there, it was closed down for a number of reasons. And we went on to a number of other things. But we were there. So we worked together with them. And we worked under the African leadership. We weren't over there doing just our own program with our team of missionaries. We were part of the African leadership team. The principal of the Bible school was a Tanzanian man. And we lived neighbors to them. Our children were about the same age. We had other neighbors who were also church workers, and many of them became our best friends. The mission agency emphasized that we are not over them, we are with them, working together. So it's this idea of partnership. And Paul reflected back about how he was able to work together and walk together with these people, with the leaders in Philippi, to bring about the gospel there. We found that as we were committed to the gospel, just as they were, that is what really brought us together and broke down these dividing walls of culture and background and race as we worshiped together and we prayed together, we ministered together. Then there's the last part of that verse where Paul says, I am confident that God will complete what he began. And what that means is that we are not perfect. The church in Philippi was not perfect. Think about who was probably in that church. We don't know who all was in it, but think about who was probably in that church. Prison warden, a converted slave girl who knows what kinds of abuse she had experienced in life. These rather dignified business women that Paul first connected with, you know, doesn't sound like a very effective church planning team to me. But that's who was there. And 10 years later, Paul was praising them, and he said, okay, it might be difficult. I'm adding some words now. It might be difficult. It's not quite what you want to see, but God is working. God's not finished, but I know he's going to complete it. That's what he said. And so that's the way we feel about this. We're not perfect. The church is not perfect. There are areas that are not yet conformed to Christ. You know, I would guess if we'd look around, we could find that canon is not perfect. Maybe some of you have noticed that. Hey, but God is working. God is working. God's not finished. Well, God will complete what has been started. And what we see now, is not what will be there in the last day when God is finished. So that's a hope that we have. So when Paul remembered this little church, he saw a church that had problems. And as he goes through the letter, he talks about some of these problems. I think there were some struggling with discouragement. There was disunity. There are indications in the letter that there was disunity there. They faced opposition from outside. They were bothered by false teaching. But he was able to say, God is still working. And as we think about the church in Africa, we see some of the struggles they've had, and they would not be proud to talk about some of the things that have happened there. It's not a perfect church, and we can tell all the glorious stories, but there's some real challenges there. We've seen leaders who have used their positions for their own benefit, financial, gain power and influence, to gain respect for the wrong reasons. While we were there, there was a severe conflict in the church with one particular bishop who was motivated more by his own tribal loyalties than by the gospel. And it was a severe testing time. He grabbed powers, he dismissed other leaders, he enriched himself, and it brought a lot of deep division within the church. In fact, this part doesn't get into the history books, but we had a church meeting there once under police guard because the government was afraid of the violence that could erupt. This is a Mennonite church. But those are some of the struggles that were there. Today, that has largely passed, and they have gotten over that and come through that, I think, stronger. It was so severe, just for me personally, that as I came out of that, I even questioned my own call to ministry because of the pressure and the stress that was in that situation. And we returned back here after 4 years over there. But 3 years later, we were on our way back for another 6 years. God brought healing, and there were some changes in the situation there, and I've not questioned my call since then. They struggle with applying the gospel to their culture. You know, how do you deal with cultural issues? What does it bless? What does it forbid? And so on. We've seen people given scholarships to study, and then they either go to other places and don't come back and serve the church, and so on. This talent is lost to the church. There are some problems that the church has been struggling with. But I read Paul's words that the one who began the good work will complete it. And we see it happening. And today, we see a church that is largely unified and motivated and reaching out. But I want to say that our memories of the African church are not all bad. And here are some words that describe it. Number one is growing. The church is growing. It's expanding. New churches are emerging, beginning where the missionaries started, and it spread out. There were some mission stations started, schools, hospitals, and so on. But then others have, as they've got education, they went to other cities for education or for jobs, and slowly the church began to emerge in other cities, and it has continued to grow. Now, so in the almost 80 years since the missionaries started, just in the region. Now the figure up here I think was 50,000 in the whole East African region. Now just in the district where it started, there are now, and this is a district. It's about the size of Sussex County, an area about the size of Sussex County. There are now 18,000 members, and about 95 churches. 18,000 members, 95 churches. And I couldn't help but compare that. You know, the Mennonites came to this area about 100 years ago. It's almost 100 years ago. How have we done? You think about that. I haven't seen the 18,000 members of the 95 churches. But what is the difference? And I think one of the differences, just from a human angle, one of the differences, they take it seriously. It's just part of their DNA. It's part of their mission is to reach out and expand. The bishop in that area, Bishop John, says, this district now, the Mennonite Church has entered into 90% of this district. We have churches in 90% of this district. And I think if we would be in 90% of Sussex County, we'd feel pretty good, wouldn't we? We could have a celebration. But you know what? That's not where his focus is, on the 90%. His focus is on the 10%. He said, and right over here in this area, down by the little town called Kinesi, out at the end near the lake, there's no churches out there, and we're going out there. He's gonna get that 10%. It's a mentality that he brings to it, that he is outreach-oriented, and that is so important. So it is a growing church in throughout and expanding to new areas. Second word I want to use is the idea of vision, and this is part of what I've been referring to. They have a vision to reach out and bring the good news to the people around them, to new areas, and where some have never heard the gospel. I have a prayer request that just came this week it was an evangelistic program that was going on during this week. From one particular area where they have a discipleship training program. This one bishop has initiated it, and so they have 3 months of training, 1 month of outreach, and this past week they've been out. I just want to read this to you. This is the kind of thinking that they have. He says this team will be leaving Monday morning, 14th of May, to travel to an area nearby called Rabaga. You don't have to remember that. It won't be on the test. They will camp there for the whole week, just as they did in a town called Mwamalili, which now does have a church. But they will camp there for the whole week. They covet your prayers. This area also has many forces of darkness, which the people use as their protection and for medicine, etc. Already, when the leaders went to survey the area, okay, just the leaders going to survey the area, there was deliverance from sickness, and one person received salvation. Our prayer is that the Lord will manifest his power and protection there within this week and thereafter, just as it happened in the other town. Now, that was just this past week. They've been out there. I don't have any updated reports on that. But as you think about it, just pray for the outcomes of this evangelistic effort. These kinds of things are going on. This is the vision that they have. The video told the story about where they have the 25 churches, and they've identified 17 villages where there's no church. And I asked this bishop, I said, how many leaders do you have who are ready to go and lead these new churches? And he looked a little bit, he said, I have about 5. And I thought, wow, how are you going to lead 17 churches with 5 people? Then as I talked to him more, I found out that these 5 are people who have said, I'm willing to do it, but even those 5 have no training. They don't really know what they're going to do. The need for training for leaders. The vision is there, the outreach is there, and they just need the leaders. They'll be working at that. So growing, they're growing. There's vision. The other one is serving. The church is concerned about the poor and the needs of people. There are people who have AIDS. The HIV/AIDS epidemic is big there. They're concerned about the education for their children. And another thing is the low salaries of their pastors. I mean, they want their pastors to be able to minister. But my point there is that they see the needs around them. I want to read a report that I got off of somebody else's blog who lives over there. It relates to the Mennonite Church in a town called Morogoro. Okay? Morogoro. You can say that. But anyway, let me just Let me just read this. A little story from Morogoro Town about an unusual way to build a church. This town where we live is a small town with few economic opportunities and relatively few Mennonites came here. But some time ago, these few began to meet together for worship in a university classroom. There is a university in this town. On a Sunday morning and plan ways to build a church. Several years ago, they were given the opportunity to acquire a small plot of land several kilometers from the town center. This small plot of land turned out to be in a relatively impoverished area, and it gave them pause to find themselves surrounded by greater poverty than most of them had personally experienced. After some reflection, they decided to put their dream of a church building on hold and instead improve the lives of people around them. Their first step was to map out a radius of 3 kilometers around their plot of land and identify poor families in that area with the goal of providing medical, educational, and spiritual support. They needed to put up buildings and get materials to meet this new goal. So instead of building a church, they built a preschool with 3 classrooms that meets 5 days a week. They built a computer lab that is connected to the internet, and they offer computer classes to young people in the area every weekend. They built a tailoring classroom and filled it with treadle sewing machines to teach young people how to sew. Most clothes for men and women are made in tailor shops here, so this is a good skill for someone who dreams of having their own business someday. Since the water supply is unreliable, they put up a huge water storage tank so that women and children in the community don't have to trek far for precious water when the neighborhood pipes run dry. But during this time, they still didn't have a church building, so every Sunday, the Mennonites in Morogoro squeezed into a preschool classroom for worship. They didn't have housing for Pastor Michael, so he and his family made their home in a small office on the church grounds. Last year, with their programs for children and youth in place, the young church leaders marshaled their remaining resources and bought a small house near the church for the pastor. He and his family moved in right away, even though it still needs a lot of renovation. During this time, people from the community took notice of the changes going on around them. Now, 200 children and adults from the community come to their services. Somebody said, preach the gospel every day. If necessary, use words. And that's the kind of church this is. This year, finally, the leaders in this young church resolved to work on their dream of a sanctuary large enough to hold the current congregation with room for many more, because they are definitely going to grow. Their community work now takes up a lot of their funds, so this church building will be a real step of faith. The first step was to draw up a detailed budget for the sanctuary and put in the foundation. Mennonite churches in Dar es Salaam collected money for the roof that went up in January of this year. With a roof over their heads, they meet in that open space on Sunday morning. In fact, it's so open that chickens wander through during the services. Their budget for the remaining work comes to $60,000, and it's a pay-as-you-go building. The walls are going up slowly now. They need many more walls, windows, doors, electrical work, a good floor, and toilets just for the building, not to mention all the other items that a finished church needs. It's an inspiring young congregation. That was written March 9 of this year. April 23, she wrote this. On Sunday, several members of the church staff told us touchingly that with the walls up, they were gathered in the church office last Friday afternoon trying to figure out how to stretch the budget to get the cement they need for a floor. Right at that moment, an email came into the office with news of another outside donor making a contribution that will help cover much of the cost of that cement. Next Sunday, they said, that floor will be down. I've seldom seen people so jubilant. Windows and doors are next on the wish list. Yay, the days of chickens wandering through our church on Sunday morning may soon be over. Now, this is just one church, but it's the challenge they face to even gather this amount of money. But it's also the spirit that they bring to it, that they put the needs of their community before their own. So they are a serving church. And another word I want to use here is that they are a Jesus-centered church. They see the example of Jesus, healing, teaching, reconciling, and they're trying to follow Jesus' example in those areas. The Mennonite churches are influenced by the East African Revival movement which I don't know how much you know about that, probably not a lot. This was something that spread through East Africa in the 40s and 50s, 60s, maybe even somewhat into the 70s. And it was a movement that began actually in the country of Rwanda with, I think, a teacher. But anyway, it emphasized confession of sin and coming before the cross, being transparent with your fellow believers, being open. It didn't come with a lot of noise and drama and spectacular displays of power, but it came with humility and brokenness and commitment to serve each other. And to the phrase they used was to walk in the light, from 1 John, if we walk in the light, and to bow before the cross, which is when we where we give up our rights and just come depending on God. With this church conflict I referred to, there are various efforts at reconciliation, and one senior missionary who was no longer there at one point but visited occasionally at one point was asked, would you be willing to meet with them and try to work at reconciliation? And he was one who was influenced very deeply by this revival movement from when he was there. And his answer was, I will meet them at the foot of the cross, only at the foot of the cross. Now, what did he mean by that? It's not here to try to figure out all the who's right, who's wrong, but it's to simply come in humility, confessing my own sins and being able to walk in transparency and openness before our brothers and sisters. And if we can come with that spirit, and if they can all come with that spirit, then I'm willing to work with them. Now, that movement has affected the church even today. Back at in the time that it was going through, it transformed the relationships between missionaries and local church leaders and African leaders. Before that, there was some arrogance and there was pride. And, you know, as missionaries, after all, we do have more education and God has called us here. You know, we our culture is more developed, so it's easy to look down on them. And they can look down on us as the outsiders. And there was some spirit of rivalry there. But when that movement came in and got a hold of people, the pastors, the bishop, the missionaries, it brought them together in a new way. And it continues to shape the life of the church today. It's a Jesus-centered church. Jesus is at the heart of everything. It's a spiritual church. Church that expresses a faith in God. I think we often find it difficult because there are so many things that distract us. In a prosperous culture with so much technology, we have a solution for just about everything. We have technology. We have medications. There's always a formula, a strategy, or we have a bank account we can draw on. You know, when you don't have those things, you kind of naturally look to God. But Africa as a continent is one where the awareness of God is just part of who they are. It's not the same kind of secular society that we have here. And so it's a spiritual church. And this also comes through in the way they live their life together, in their worship and so on. I think the last word I would use is the struggle part. It's a struggling church. They struggle with many issues, just in a developing country. Economic issues, education, health is a problem. There's corruption and tribalism. Fortunately, we don't have that in America, do we? Corruption and tribalism, political rivalries. No, we don't. We can be grateful for that, can't we? I'm never cynical. But they affect the life of the church, and they're really trying to be faithful as Christians. In fact, some of the things I've described, you might say, well, if they can do all this, what do they need missionaries for? And I think these are places, there are things happening, but it's not across the church, and there are many places where they don't have access to this. So these were some of the same things I think that Paul saw when he remembered the church in Philippi, this mixture of strength and weakness, of victory and struggle. God has not demanded perfection, but he asked for commitment. And he asks that we do walk together. There are these walls sometimes that are between us, and the cross is what breaks them down. Our assignment will then be to walk with these leaders and partner with them, in especially with regard to leadership training programs across the church for the church as it continues to grow, mainly for pastors. And we're just grateful for this opportunity we have to be partners with this people. And I think God is calling all of us to partner in some way, to realize that there's a world out there that we are called to connect with and to minister to. So I am simply this morning laying this challenge before you. It doesn't have to be Africa, but where is God calling you to connect? Where are their walls? Sean mentioned about praying for somebody that needs the gospel. Where are the walls that divide us from other people? And it's an invitation to accept this challenge to join what God is doing across the street, around the world.
Dennis, you can come up. Worship team, you can come up. As we conclude the service, I would like Joe and Gloria to actually meet at the cross with a number of us who wish to pray blessings on you guys. So at this time, anyone who wants to join them and specifically pray over them, go ahead and stand. And those of you who, like I mean literally right now, get up. And those of you who want to go pray with Joe and Gloria, I'd like you to move over there. And now we're going to give our invitation to our generalized ministry time.
Gloria talked about much fruit. Much fruit. I'm going to read something from Malachi. And it talks about God sending His Spirit in at a coming time. And it says, Malachi chapter 3, and it says, but who can endure the day of His coming? Who can stand when He appears? For He will be like a refiner's fire or a launderer's soap. He will sit at the refiner and the purifier of silver. He will purify the Levites and refine them like gold and silver. The Levites were the priests. And 1 Peter says that you are a royal priesthood, that you are the priesthood today, that you are the Levites today. You're the ones to be refined. And he says, and the offerings of Judah and Jerusalem will be acceptable to the Lord as in the days gone by in the former days. And when you're refined, then you will produce much fruit, much fruit. And Jesus said in Matthew, he said, we are supposed to be meek. We're supposed to hunger and thirst for righteousness. We're supposed to be merciful. We're supposed to be pure in heart. We're supposed to be peacemakers. Much fruit, much fruit, much fruit. And we're not supposed to be fruit inspectors. I'm not supposed to check your fruit, but I'm supposed to produce fruit, not inspect yours. If you don't know Jesus as your Savior, please come up for prayer. If you don't know Jesus in a personal way, you know, He said, my sheep know my voice. That would say that you hear His voice, because you know His voice. If you never heard Jesus talk to you, come up front here. Let's pray. Let's talk about that. If you need prayer, come on up front. If you're sick, don't feel well, come up front. And if you don't have much fruit, come up front. Let's pray. Let's see what can happen. Come on up front. Let's change things. Thank you.
And all of you is more than enough.